Hello and welcome to PodRights, a series of podcasts from the Australian Human Rights Commission. I'm Graham Innes, back in the interview chair this week, the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. Not long ago, violence and discrimination experienced by international students in Australia was prominent in the news, both here and overseas. As these issues have faded from our headlines, many people could be forgiven for thinking that the problems have been solved and the discrimination has ended. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Last week, Race Discrimination Commissioner Helen Zoki released a new commission publication entitled Principles to Promote and Protect the Human Rights of International Students. The principles are targeted at organisations and individuals working with and providing services to international students, and they're intended to provide assistance in solving this ongoing problem. With me today to explain and discuss the publication, and the principles of course, is the Commission's Race Discrimination Principal Advisor, Rivka Nissim. Rivka came to the Commission in early 2012 from our Victorian equivalent, where she managed strategic policy and project work on discrimination on the various grounds that the Victorian legislation covers. Rivka has worked in the NGO sector, in social policy, research and service delivery. So welcome for the first time to PodRights, Rivka.
Thank you, Graham.
So firstly, and probably most importantly really, what is this publication and what are the principles designed to do?
Well, the publication's titled Principles to Promote and Protect the Human Rights of International Students, and really that's what they are.
Mm.
So often we know that human rights language and concepts can be quite impenetrable to people who might not be lawyers or might not work in this sector, you know, on a regular basis.
Mm.
So what we've tried to do is articulate the human rights standards that Australia complies with because of our being a signatory to various international human rights treaties,
mm-hmm.
and that we know relate to concerns that international students and their representatives have raised about the sorts of issues they face when they come to live and study in Australia. So they've been developed really in response to the needs and the concerns that have been raised with us and with the state commissions by international students and their representative bodies. And I guess how they differ from other work that's done in relation to international students. For example, we know that there's been quite a number of initiatives aimed at improving service delivery for international students by the federal government, state governments, even some local governments.
Mm-hmm.
Really how they differ is they're aiming to be holistic and grounded in a human rights framework.
Mm.
So they're not just about, for example, students' rights in relation to education providers when they attend an institution or that sort of thing.
Mm.
They're out there and they're very important, but these are really aimed to look at the diverse experiences of students in all areas of their lives, what their entitlements are as people who possess human rights, as we all do, and people living in Australia, and then what they actually mean for government, for service providers, and for the individuals themselves.
So trying to make human rights real in this particular area is what you're saying?
Yeah, very much so.
So looking at them in practice or sort of on a practical level, how will they be applied in the marketplace or in the particular place that you've talked about relevant to international students? And what are you hoping that they'll achieve? How will they work, if you like?
Well, we've really designed them to be as practical as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, human rights and rights language can be quite impenetrable to people who don't use it. So it's very plain English. And it's really intended for international students themselves, their advocates, service providers, government agencies, governments themselves, all across that sort of spectrum within the international student sector, as a practical tool for the realisation of international students' human rights. So, for example, we really hope they'll be used by policymakers within government, at all levels of government, when they're developing policies or strategies which affect international students, to use this as a bit of a human rights lens, I suppose, and go, does this policy, does this strategy, does this initiative uphold these human rights? Have we covered off on these sorts of issues within a human rights framework? We also really hope they'll be used by various service providers who oftentimes do a really good job and do think about the human rights, the impact on the human rights and the expectations of students when they're delivering services. And then this will be an additional tool almost a checklist, really, if you will, that they can use. We also really hope they'll be used by international students themselves and by their advocates. And we've got a really strong international student sector in Australia. They're really effective in the work that they do to represent the interests of international students, and we hope that this will be a really practical tool for them to enhance their advocacy with governments and service providers and other sorts of stakeholders.
So, Rivka, if I was at a university coordinating their student accommodation assistance program, and I knew that there were a large bunch of international students studying at the university, you'd hope that as I put that program together, I'd go to these principals and have a look at them and how they apply to the area of accommodation provision and take those into account in the program design. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying. So, for example, I'm just flicking through my copy of the principles here. Somebody in a university in charge of the accommodation program might go to Principle 2, which talks about access to human rights protections and freedom from discrimination protections. And there's a key point in there around ensuring that adequate information on tenancy rights and responsibilities and complaints processes are available to international students to maximise their safety and avoid exploitation and unsafe cohabitation.
Right.
And that's a really practical thing that any accommodation provider could do and should be doing.
Yep. So one of the things I might do to follow that through is either check with the state government department in question that tenancy information is available in some of the key languages spoken, first languages spoken by international students.
That's right. And there's also information, there's principles in here around making information to students accessible in their language of origin.
And where are the principles available, Rivka?
They're available on our website, the Human Rights Commission website.
So that's www.humanrights.gov.au.
Yep. They're under the race discrimination section on the race discrimination page. I think they're actually on the home page at the moment because they've recently been launched.
Sure.
We've also made them available in the 10 top languages that are spoken by international students.
Okay.
Which is, I guess, our way of, you know, practicing what we preach. But also it's really important. Students are over here. They meet a certain level of language proficiency to come and study here. But there is an entitlement, we believe, for them to have information accessible in their language of origin so that we can be sure that they're getting that information and that it's getting through to them.
And, yeah, I mean, it would be really hard if I went to a country where English wasn't the first language and it's my first language and I couldn't look at these sorts of things in a language that I was really comfortable and familiar with, so that's really important.
Yeah, we think so.
As I said, many people are probably under the impression that the issues these principles address have gone away. Are you able to tell us some stories from international students which challenge that, which have convinced you and Helen Zoki to continue to do this work? Why do we still need these?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting when the issues, the really prominent issues around international student safety came out a couple of years ago with all those attacks on international students. A lot of other things came out of the woodwork that had obviously been going on for a very long time, but hadn't necessarily got as high a profile as some of those safety issues.
Yep.
And they're the things that haven't gone away. Obviously, there's still safety issues that students experience. But a lot of the other sort of underlying or systemic issues organisations like ourselves were made aware of at that time and continue to work with student groups on. So, for example, we were talking before about accommodation. There is real issues for international students in accessing safe and affordable accommodation. And obviously this taps into a broader problem that Australia's got around provision of safe and affordable and habitable and well-located accommodation. It's not just international students that can't always access that. But, for example, we hear students about stories about international students, particularly female international students, being pressured, for example, for sexual favours from landlords that are often not official landlords, but in exchange for accommodation because they can't afford to rent their own accommodation or they can't find somewhere that is safe and accessible to where they need to be. And obviously that sort of stuff, you know, is not on, shouldn't happen. But we know that that sort of thing does happen. Other issues that get raised with us and also with Fair Work Australia is around employment. And obviously international students aren't the only ones also that can get exploited in their employment circumstances. But often students can come from countries that don't have employment protections, whereas we do. So we know that students can get underpaid, can not know their workplace rights, can work in occupations that can be unsafe So, for example, they can be taxi drivers, can work in service stations or convenience stores. Shift can be long. They might need to travel home late at night or work overnight. And so they're particularly vulnerable when they're working in those situations, and often there's not other work options open to them because of their visa requirements or their study requirements.
And it's much easier to exploit someone who doesn't know the rules as well, isn't it?
So that's exactly right.
What sort of input have international students had in putting these principles together?
So we at the Australian Human Rights Commission, and in conjunction with some of the state and territory commissions and some of the other student representative bodies, have hosted a number of forums and consultations over the last couple of years to hear from student representative bodies and students themselves about what the key human rights issues they were facing are and what sorts of protections they think that they need. And so it's really been a ground-up process of the sector and different individuals and organisations within it raising these issues with us, and then us really translating them into what human rights protections are available and what Australia's obligations are in relation to our human rights commitments in relation to those issues.
And who else were involved? I'm sure you didn't just talk to students. What about government, universities, etc.?
Yeah, very much so. So we've talked to the federal government. We've also done some consultations with state governments. We've talked to representatives of the international education sector. There's a number of academics that are very active in this field. They've also been involved, as well as organisations that provide services to international students. So we think it's been a really comprehensive process.
And it's been going on for some time, hasn't it? Because I know the work started when I was Race Discrimination Commissioner, and then Helen and you and your team have picked it up.
That's right. It's been an ongoing process. And I think that also reflects the sort of journey that these issues have gone through in a policy sense. You know, a couple of years ago, the impetus was really, I think, coming from the student safety issues that were raised as a result of all of those attacks. And over time, we've come to see all of the other issues that underlie those safety issues and the other sorts of issues international students face. So it's been an iterative process, I suppose.
Yeah. How have they been received so far, Rivka? What sort of feedback have you had?
Well, it's early days. We launched them just under a week ago, so last Thursday, the 4th of October. The Race Discrimination Commissioner launched them at the International Education Conference in Melbourne. But we've had really positive feedback so far, which is really nice. So we've had good feedback from the university and private education sectors around how they think they can use the principles in their sectors and their education service delivery, which is great. We've had good feedback from international students and their representative bodies. And what's really nice about that feedback is they've acknowledged that the process has been inclusive of them. They feel that their views and their feedback has been taken into account through the process, so the principles do actually reflect what they've raised. We've also had some good feedback from sectors that you might not necessarily expect. So, for example, Migration Institute of Australia, which is the peak body for migration professionals, has been really positive and talked about what their role could be in making migration agents aware of these principles to inform their work, which is fantastic.
So these are principles, aren't they? So they're not law as such. Their guidance. Is that viewed as a problem by international students?
No, I think they understand what they're intended to be. We didn't embark on a law reform process, and really it's not to say the laws in this area are perfect, but it's really an example of translating the legislation and our human rights commitments into really tangible, meaningful principles that are accessible to students, and I think that's recognised by the sector.
Now, Australia's education sector, in fact, Australia more broadly, it's fair to say, I think, did suffer some pretty bad reputational damage in some overseas countries as a result of the attacks on international students. And you may not wish to comment on this, but I'll make the comment. And some politicians dealt with it badly by denying it rather than accepting it and wanting to do something about it. Do you think these principles have implications for us internationally? Will they help to address that reputation damage?
Look, I think the intention behind the principles at that level, which we've communicated to government and I think government is quite supportive of, is that if we implement these principles, if we say we've made a commitment to international students having a positive experience when they're in Australia, we recognise their human rights and we're committed to protecting them, then that will really only enhance our reputation as a destination for international students. And obviously, you know, as you know, the international student market's very competitive. So us coming out on the front foot and saying, well, we acknowledge these issues and this is the framework that we think is best to look at how we can address these issues within a human rights sort of way, we think that's actually a positive thing to be doing and sends a positive message overseas. What's actually interesting is the Race Discrimination Commissioner and I were in Canberra a couple of weeks ago, and we had the opportunity to brief a number of ambassadors through the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade on both these principles and the National Anti-Racism Strategy. And their reaction was really interesting, and they were really saying these are really important things to have because we deal with students that have these issues, it's really important for them to know what their rights are. So I think they really got, from their perspective, that we're trying to do something about the issues that students face and being on the front foot about it. So I think it's been seen as a positive thing.
It's a good thing to do, but it's not the complete solution, is it?
No, it's not the complete solution. And it's not going to solve all of our problems, but hopefully it's a step in the right direction.
Sure. Well, where to from here with these principles in circulation? What happens next?
Well, we'll continue to be working to promote the principles to all of the sectors that we've talked about, so international students themselves, universities, advocacy bodies, regulators, representatives from the education sector, basically all of those sorts of organisations in the sector. And we'll be looking to review the implementation of the principles in a year's time. So really to find out, have they been useful as an advocacy tool? Have they informed policy development? Have they been used by institutions? All of that sort of stuff. The other thing is that I think is really important is we've included information about how students can use our complaints processes if they're experiencing discrimination. And that information's been translated into the languages that we've translated the principles into. So on a really practical level, we really want to make students aware of the rights that they've got under domestic law as well. And so we hope that by students becoming aware of the principles, they'll also become aware of their rights under our domestic law and be better empowered to exercise them.
Yeah. And that evaluation is really important, isn't it? It's becoming more and more a part of the Commission's work.
Yeah, and that's great. I mean, it's really important to know that, you know, if what we're doing is making a difference, if we're effective in the sort of work that we do.
Well, it's great to see these principles finalised and given the chance to have the impact that you've described. So thanks very much for coming and talking to us about them, Rivka.
No worries. Thanks very much, Graeme.
And thanks to all of you listening to PodRights. Remember, this podcast is for you. So if you have a suggestion of someone with whom I should talk or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au or find me and message me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graeme Innes, GraeMeInnes. Also, if you want to engage more on human rights issues, have a look at tellmesomethingidontknow.gov.au, our Something in Common project, where you can read fascinating human rights facts and stories, take part in polls, add your own content, and find out what you can do to advance human rights issues in Australia. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next PodRights in the series, because human rights are for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graeme Innes. Goodbye for now.